This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Davina from Devon. I've been sober curious for quite a few years. Never really made it stick because, well, everybody drinks alcohol, right? Anyway, I decided to join OTI after listening to the pod and just the enthusiasm from Ben and Shaz shouting about AF life. I'm so glad I joined the community because I'm now nearly 200 days alcohol free. It's an absolute game changer for me. Everybody on the Zooms are lovely. It's just like one great big extended family and we're all just cheering everybody on. I would recommend without hesitation that you join because it is just the best thing I've ever done.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is absolutely fantastic to have you listening. We can't wait to chat to today's returning guest on the podcast. So let's try and keep the intros brief, she says out loud to herself. My name is Sharon Hartley. I'm 50 years old. I live in Lancashire. I don't drink anymore. And it's dead good. That's it. That's all you're going to get. I don't do it on my own. Hello, Ben.
Ben, 4 years alcohol free in the summer. Live in Liverpool. Binge drinker. Not anymore. Love being alcohol free. Done. Great.
Is that it?
I'm just following your lead.
I like that a lot.
We sing about the joys of sobriety here. There we go. That's a bit more.
And we do it week in, week out. Wang on about sobriety, blah, blah, blah. I used to drink loads, don't anymore, et cetera. I can't believe how fast time has gone because today's guest was with us on the podcast best part of 12 months ago, I think it was, Sarah Turner, a.k.a. the Unmumsy Mum. Flipping heck, welcome back. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It's lovely to see both of your faces again. And I can't believe it's been a year.
No, we can't either. Should we just start, Ben, by making an apology for what Sarah's just had to witness in terms of getting this podcast to air? It's chaos, isn't it, Sarah, behind the scenes? It's absolute chaos.
Yeah, but you know what? That's alcohol-free life, isn't it, Sarah? You know, you remove alcohol. It's the foundation where you can build lots of other things on top of it. Life tends to get quite busy, doesn't it? Me and Shaz are both currently up the wall for all sorts of reasons. How about you? Are you okay?
I'm all right, but life, yeah, with or without alcohol is a bit of a circus, isn't it? With kids, I've got three boys who, you know, tonight was a classic example. It was pick up from school, make tea. There was some kind of fight going on in the garden. They're big into wrestling, so it's like actual wrestling belts to go out and entrance music to the trampoline and just absolute madness. And then even the cat wants my attention. The cat's on his back, like rolling around, wanting a belly rub. And yeah, I'm permanent. Kind of, yeah, spreading myself too thin over work and home and life, and I think that's just common for lots of people that I speak to. It's like, how do people do it all? Well, they don't. You can only keep a certain number of balls in the air at any one time. So yeah, that's how I'm doing. The same old busy madness.
So last time we spoke, Sarah, you were around 6 months alcohol free, and the reaction to your episode was amazing. Did you expect that? You know, just sort of, I'll just share a little bit about alcohol-free life and this is what I've been doing. And then boom, we got loads of messages. I think you did as well. What was your reaction to that reaction?
I was absolutely blown away by the number of messages and comments that I received after that episode went live. And actually, I think I was a tiny bit apprehensive about sharing it because I had kind of publicly said on my stories that I'd stopped drinking, but I hadn't really gone into any level of detail. And I was getting lots of messages from people being like, can you let us, you know, tell us why, what's going on? And I don't know, I guess there was a bit of me still then that felt as though I'd built up this identity online. And part of that was, I guess, the perceived mummy wine time, you know, we've had a stressful day, like hurrah for the vodka and tonic at the end of it. And I was a bit nervous about going against that, I guess, and saying, do you know what, guys, I've got out. I'm not on that shit roller coaster anymore.
You know what though, but what a brave thing to do. You know, to actually go against everything about that mummy wine culture. And I think that the longer you go, and I'm only speaking from my experience as well, it starts to really piss you off when you see it for what it is. How do you feel now, Sarah, looking back at that time?
It's really interesting because I just the other day sent Shaz a time hop special of mine, which was me in a club with a wedge of lime in my mouth and a shot glass on my head. And I said, Shaz, look what's come up on my time hop. But actually I got time hop for my A Mumsy Mum posts. And I have to say alcohol was like featured as part of my identity, but I wasn't huge. I wouldn't say that I was kind of one of the real thank God for wine. But I just felt as though that was part of what others perceived made me fun. So sometimes I almost played up to it a bit. And maybe even times when I wasn't reaching for a bottle of wine, when the kids had a bath and bed, I might have kind of gone, you know, oh, cheers to the weekend, guys, like wine emoji, because it made me feel like I was part of something. Now I think you still see all of those posts, and not just parenting, but just posts generally about, you know, kind of, we always talk about the shit things on walls. And all it's the memes as well, isn't it? It's all the memes and the gifs and the, I don't know. I see a lot of stuff being shared like still online, and I do feel differently about it now. Whereas before I would have been like, oh, that's so funny. How can we possibly survive the day without, you know, getting leathered? Now I think once you've learned all the stuff about alcohol and society and how conditioned we are just to think it's just the coolest thing ever and the best coping mechanism, when you realize what is actually going on and then you see it, you go, oh, I don't know, it just makes me wince a bit. I feel like I spend a lot of my time going, but then I'm also like, I totally was the person that would sometimes share those things, so it can't be like a judgmental
same. Absolutely the same.
Just coming out the other side of it, I guess, is weird.
I think it feels like now is a, sorry, just a quick side note to our premium podcast listeners and community members, Shit Things on Walls is returning to the premium podcast soon after a fabulous post from Maz. You see that from Maz? If you've got no idea what we're talking about, you've got to subscribe to the premium podcast. But I feel like now is a good time to talk about how famous you are, Sarah. That's all right. And why you are so famous. Because this is all part of that identity. And, you know, we love it when anyone removes alcohol and becomes a lighthouse. You know, Over the Influence is all about helping people to become happily, confidently alcohol free. And not everyone has to do what we do, put it on Instagram, do a podcast, whatever else. You can do it very quietly, do it just for you. But it is lovely when somebody who's got such a big following like you do puts it out there and then gets that positive response. Can you tell us a bit about you, and for people who haven't listened to the episode that we did a year ago, you and I suppose the identity that the public know?
Yeah, sure. So I started a blog 11 or 12 years ago, when my eldest son was a baby, and I basically just blogged my innermost thoughts, feelings, rants, insecurities about parenting. And it was a hobby. I didn't have any social media followers, but I set up a Facebook page and it just went mad. So it, you know, long story short, because obviously 12 years to condense into the writing journey and all the rest of it, but blog went mad, had a few viral posts, ended up with a book deal for the first book, and I'm now on, well, book 5, which is my second novel, is coming out in July, and I'm starting to write novel number 3. So that's but the Unmumsy Mum was my, and it still is me, but I suppose it's that weird online persona of, I had to come up with a name for the blog, and at the time that was how I felt. Like, I didn't really feel like I was in the motherhood club. I felt like I was separated from it, couldn't relate to how a lot of mums were feeling or saying that they were feeling, because I've subsequently learned that there was a lot of masking of feelings going on. So yeah, that was how I felt at the time. The irony is that I've just, you know, if we're going for the concept of what it means to be mumsy, I've become mumsier and mumsier every year since I started that blog. And now I'm just peak, like, apron on, baking, gardening, getting the kids' stuff all nicely prepared the day before, that me who started the blog would have hated. So it's a really interesting one. And again, that goes hand in hand with what we're talking about with booze and how your relationship changes, because as a person you change, we all change over time, and that's okay, and you're allowed to do that. But I suppose when you have an online identity, there is a different pressure because people follow you at the beginning for a certain reason, and then if you're not a decade later living up to those same expectations, like, I always just think that's the time when somebody can go, do you know what, you don't do it for me anymore, so I'm just going to unfollow, which is fine. But you do get people that are like, you know, I have had people, not many, but a very few, who have gone, oh, like, you know, you used to be a lot more fun. And I think part of that is because I would post pictures of me with my face in a kebab at 4 a.m. and be like, oh, you know, swimming lessons are going to be difficult tomorrow. And inside I was, well, inside and outside, I was absolutely dying of hangover. But it was like something to, yeah, to share, yeah, that people would be like, oh, that's, you know, she seems like she must be a really good, yeah, really good time. And now, like, I don't know, I don't think that I'm boring, but my sort of, a lot of the activities that I really enjoy doing now, it's just all about like having quite a nice time, reading a book and going to the garden center and going for long walks and spending time with my kids. And yeah, I'm much more settled in my role as a mum, I think, than I was at the beginning when I was like, you know, what the hell is this? I'm not cut out for it. Now I'm like, nobody's really cut out for it. We're all just learning on the job. But I also know that my kids couldn't have a, like, there's no better mum for my kids than me now. Whereas 12 years ago, I didn't believe that at all. So yeah, it's been another journey. Everything's a journey.
Oh, you've used the J word. And there we go, Sarah. Let's do
straight
it.
Straight in.
That is... Oh, it's so good to listen to. And I just want to quickly mention a comment that Hannah has put in the chat box. We've got community members watching this Zoom call. She says, lots of us have grown up with you as well. You know, so you do have people that stick with you and grow at the same time.
Absolutely.
I just want to come back to the point you said that you've never been as mumsy as you are now. How much of that is with you... And I use this inverted commas, like growing up or growing over the last 12 years, or how much of that is combined with 18 months of sobriety? Because I love what you said there. You know, I'm doing these things with the kids and I'm just being so organised. I like do butty boxes every night. Aww. And it's just the little things, and I feed the birds, and it's just, I don't know, things that I may have neglected in the past are now little nuggets of joy for me.
Yeah.
What about you?
You're so northern.
It's so tragic.
What's a butty box?
What do you mean, what's a butty box?
I don't know.
What, like, you make the sandwiches for the kids.
Yeah, like a snack box. What is it?
Like what's a snack box? What's a snack box? Is that a southern thing? I raise you to be butty box. I'll show you later, Ben. That's so funny. I'm lost
sorry,
my thread.
Come on, Sarah. What was the question?
Also, it sounds a bit filthy. Like, I show you.
No, you're thinking lunchbox, which is a completely different
show
thing.
Show you your butty box later. Okay. yeah. No, I think part of my kind of shape shifting in identity as a parent has happened naturally because I've got older. I was in my early 20s when I had my first baby, and I'm now late 30s. So yeah, I have just naturally grown up. But I do think not drinking has taken me to that next level of shifting into a more adult, like, I don't know, just being more content with life, not in the fast lane, in a very, you know, because it's fast paced with the chaos of kids, but actually a lot of those being present and having time for the kids and making sure that they had kind of everything that I had to give them was negatively impacted by drinking, because I would either not have the energy because I was, and I think, you know, we spoke about this the last time that I was on, but I wasn't a daily drinker necessarily, and I wasn't, you know, drinking vast quantities every time that I did drink, but it was impacting my energy levels and overall mojo and zest for life every day after I'd had a drink, and sometimes days after that. So yeah, those day-to-day parenting, like the slog, and it's still a slog, don't get me wrong. I don't get up in the morning and it's like, you know, the Disney birds are tweeting and I'm like absolutely loving life. There's a lot of screaming and, you know, shouting about shoes and, oh God, we've forgotten money for the bake sale and where the fuck is his fucking coat and all the rest of it. The shit show continues. But my patience and my ability to get up and tackle the day has improved so much from not drinking. That like headspace, that clarity of thought that drinking just used to completely dull, like all the time. So yeah, I do think that I'm part of, yeah, I feel like I've grown up an extra amount since I've stopped drinking, which is lovely. Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying it so far, Sarah, being back on the podcast. And I don't want to put any undue pressure on you, but we do have those episodes that just keep coming up again and again and again, that kind of little nugget of wisdom. And your first episode is one of those. I reference it on many of my OTI community Zoom calls.
He does.
Because that shape-shifting thing, we were talking about how actually, when we're in our 20s, you know, we look back on it and go, yeah, you know what, it was all right. In the way that I lived my life then, I don't necessarily, and I think we both agreed on this, we don't look back on it and rue the fact that we ever drank. But to kind of look at it and go, I'm now in my 30s and I'm in a different place, that's all right. You know, Actually it doesn't fit my lifestyle now. That was when you were 6 months alcohol free. I mean, I suppose the pressure bit comes, Sarah, because, you know, what's another nugget of wisdom that we can keep using over and over again that you've learned now that you're 18 months alcohol free?
Oh gosh, no, I'll endeavor to come up with a bite-sized nugget of wisdom before the end of the show. I think that identity thing is so crucial to what holds people back from finally taking the plunge, and it's different for everyone, but if I'm honest with myself, that has been probably the hardest thing to like reconcile as well. So months 6 to 18 probably were harder for me than months 0 to 6. And that's, there's a whole host of reasons, but my mental health wasn't super great last year. And I think part of the giving up booze that first 6 months, and I don't know if you guys have found this or that other people in the community might have as well, is that I was almost high on the excitement of being alcohol free to start with. It was like the new, not that I was addicted, but like the new addiction, the new obsession of not drinking buoyed me to this level of like, I know we joked about being smug, but oh my God, the smugness, I could power off that all day. I was just like, oh, I'm so virtuous. And then I think alcohol, we often all use alcohol to cope with various things, and I think from months kind of 6 to maybe 12 I realized actually sometimes the wheels were coming off for me and my brain, and there wasn't that bottle of wine to then have a night out and, you know, forget about things. And so I did find it difficult because I was like, well, actually now, you know, I've given up so that I'll feel better. But objectively, if you ask me today, like this was last year, how, if I'm feeling better than I was this time last year, then in that particular moment, probably not. But if you zoomed out to the bigger picture, if you have a dip in your mental health, then alcohol is never, ever, not one time going to help the situation. So I think it's been a really interesting year because I feel like I went from like, oh, this is like really easy. And actually, there was no point in that year where I ever felt tempted to have a drink. It was more the absence of the drink at times. I sort of thought, maybe was I happier before? Maybe, you know, maybe it was all like, and that the whole, as time passes and you start to forget a little bit, the rose-tinted glasses come back on. And I started to think, oh, maybe, you know, I wasn't like, people always told me I wasn't that bad. Like maybe I wasn't that bad. And there would be that kind of, yeah, maybe like what, you know, is this the right thing? But underneath it all, and I think we spoke about this last time, I said there was that sense of kind of piece at making the right decision. And that's never left, kind of every day, even when I was feeling a bit wobbly last year, that feeling of this is definitely the best thing that I could have done has never kind of wavered, really. It's just been those sometimes the memories of, oh, that night out was fun, or that happened, or these people are going arranging this thing, and actually I'd probably not going to go to that now because it sounds quite boozy, but am I now missing out? And that learning to kind of have conviction in, actually that isn't who I want to be, we've established that, don't get sucked back in. I definitely feel as I've come out the other side of that now. But yeah, it hasn't kind of just gone like one way and been easy. It's sort of been, yeah, there's been days when I've been like, maybe I'm just really dull now, and then there have been other days where I'm like, I've never made a decision that has been better for my health, like long term, from physical and mental. So yeah, I'm kind of at 18 months, I'm so much more able to own that I don't drink. I no longer say kind of, oh, I'm not drinking at the moment, or because it's like, it's been a year and a half, so now I just say I don't drink. And actually, it's weird, at the beginning I would say it in such a way that was defensive, that I felt then meant people would ask me questions. But now I just say I don't drink, and it kind of comes out in such a way that people go, oh, right, like, okay. So, I mean, not everyone, you still get the knobhead reactions to not drinking, which, you know, as we've said before, you could do a whole episode just on those. But, you know, the ones that I struggle the most with, I think, are people that are adamant that I must really miss it and won't take no for an answer when I say that I don't. Like, so, you know, yeah, but you must really miss it, but don't you just miss, oh God, I can't think of anything worse than going out on a night out and not drinking. And I just say, yeah, I was there as well. Actually, I used to say I'd rather cut off an arm than give up red wine. But here we are.
She's done it, Shaz. You said that she would, but zoom out to the bigger picture. In this moment, yeah, you know what? I probably don't feel, but zoom out to the bigger picture. I'm going to use that time as hammer on, Sarah. I hope that's okay.
Love it. That's fine. Love, yeah.
You'd be going on Ben's quote board again, Sarah, again. Thank you so much for talking really honestly as well about the fact that it's not an easy ride at all. And for talking about your mental health, I think these conversations are so important. And we hear so often from people, obviously, you know, you stop drinking and you are riding that pink cloud, la la la, isn't it great, and you do feel smug and it's wonderful, then all of a sudden, boom, oh, hang on, I feel crap, right, how do I deal with this, because I'm not going to drink because I've removed the alcohol. When you did dip last year, Sarah, and you only share as much as you're happy to talk about, how did you cope then? What were your mechanisms in place where in the past you might have had a glass of wine or whatever?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think not having booze to fall back on, and it's not a reliable fallback, but that kind of stressful week or feeling a bit down, or I think I have had periods of that in the past, but where I would gear up towards, oh, it's a Thursday or a Friday night bottle of wine and that'll be fun. And then because you're kind of artificially giving yourself a boost, you are, for that first or second or third sometimes glass of wine, you do feel better, you feel lively and you feel fun and you feel, so I would look forward to those moments. So it was the, and we've mentioned before about how sometimes the anticipation of the drink is more exciting, yeah, than the drink itself. And yeah, I think as soon as I started to have a dip, it was like, well, what have I got to look forward to then? Because obviously my brain wasn't quite, you know, quite right at that time. But whereas previously it would have been like, oh, booze will give me a pick-me-up this weekend, it was like, oh God, like, yeah. And then you realize you have to actually do the harder work of exercising and eating healthier and talking about your feelings, like shock horror, I had to actually admit that I was feeling like shit and yeah, speak to a doctor and say, this, I'm not, you know, I'm just not myself. Albeit I did, there was a little nod back to the smugness when they were like, and how, you know, how many units of alcohol are you drinking? And I was like, none, doctor.
I love that. I had it happen last week. Honestly, I had a doctor, a consultant and a pre-op nurse go, Mrs. Hartley, three times, can you tell us how much you drink, or, you know, if you drink? And I went, excuse me, zero, and like this big singing voice, and it just gave me such pleasure, Sarah. It was ace.
Yeah, it was really. And you know, I And actually, it was so nice. I was like, I don't know, there was a little bit of me as well that felt as though they were like, well, she's really, you know, she's trying her best to do, to look yeah. after herself here. So, you know, it's really interesting because I wonder if I would have got to the stage of, you know, saying I don't feel like myself, or if I would have plastered over it with wine time to look forward to, and then probably would have come out the other side, as these phases often happen, but not really actually addressed.
But maybe coming out the other side considerably worse off than you would have been if you were to continue drinking through that and over that.
Yeah, I think I would have had those artificially inflated highs of the Friday and Saturday night with the glass of wine, and that feeling of taking the edge off and the world kind of going a bit blurry. And I used to look forward to that so much that I think as soon as I started to feel a bit of a dip, I was like, I could just do with a night off, almost like a night off from my brain. And that would, but I also then know I would have suffered with terrible anxiety for the next few days, no energy. And, you know, I think I've realized that what the thing that I value the most is being kind of happy and present just in the ordinary everyday moments with the kids. And I'm much better able to do that without drinking than I was, you know, slightly foggy. And as I say, I wasn't like madly hungover like often, but I just didn't feel, I was never firing on all cylinders. I was kind of always a bit sluggish and meh. So I think now, just those moments of, and it's all the cliches that you see from every account that I followed at the beginning, when I was like, I need to cling on to people that are not drinking and see what they're doing. And it was people being like, you know, it never gets old to wake up on a Sunday and switch the kettle on and listen to the birds singing and just think that feeling for me, watching my sons, you know, two play grassroots football, and we're often in a muddy field somewhere at a weekend, and to actually just be there, to be fully there to watch them and not be thinking, oh my god, like when is this over, so that I can lie down for a bit. Or yeah, so I think it's been an interesting like learning journey, I guess, to work out what is important, and that is so much more important to me than having those, you know, weekend moments where you kind of think, I just want to check out of real life for a minute. And you know, I still dance around the kitchen to like really awful 90s R&B. I still like, I'm still super chatty on a night out if I go out for a meal with friends. Like, in fact, a friend actually said to me, like, I always used to think you were just like hyperactive, you know, when you got drinking, but actually you just feed off other people in a social situation. Like, and it's really interesting if you give yourself the opportunity to socialize without booze, you realize that you're actually quite capable of doing it, more so than you'd taught yourself that you were, because you relied on booze, which meant that you therefore learned that every successful social interaction you had involved booze. Whereas actually, you know, meals with friends and stuff, now I can remember all the conversations. I still make an absolute tit of myself sober, to be honest, a lot of the time, you know, but you don't.
I have a friend that says,
you don't.
So Sharon, you're still a dick, just not a drunken one. And I'm like, thanks, Anna.
You can, yeah, you're still a dick, but you can remember it.
Sarah, I want to talk to you about that kind of contentment thing, because not long after we spoke to you, we spoke to a really nice American man. He was so lovely as well. Was it Austin Carr? Was that his name?
He was the nicest man.
Background.
He was a lovely man.
And we talked about how actually if more people strived for contentment, you know, rather than I must have the best job and the biggest house and the this, that, and prove myself in this way and do that. If everyone just strived to be kind of content, that the world would probably be a better place.
Yeah,
it's lovely hearing you talk about that. Why were you and Mumsy when you first started this blog 12 years ago, why were you... Because at that point, it's almost you were saying, well, hang on a second, that isn't me. Yes, I am technically a mom because I have children, but I am not conforming to that stereotype of what being a mom now is. Why were you a mumsy?
For me, it was much less about what I looked like or behaved like. So it was never kind of an attack on mumsiness. It was more that I felt like the mumsy mums were the ones that had their shit together, that knew what they were doing, that were kind of made for the job, you know? So you'd go to a baby group and they'd have all the right kit in the changing bag and they'd, you know, they'd already have some kind of routine figured out and everybody was quite well put together and they just loved it. And if you said, how are you getting on? They'd be like, yeah, I love it. It's great. And, you know, sort of cherishing every moment. There was a lot of that on social media at the time. And I just felt as though, in comparison, I didn't have any of my shit together. I was always forgetting things. I had a baby that had like colic and reflux and cried all the time and was never happy. And I just felt like everything I went to, I felt decidedly unmumsy in comparison. Like I didn't belong in that group. Like it wasn't okay when somebody said, how are you getting on? You know, a few times I made the mistake of not reading the room and going, like falling in the door of like a local stay and play group and going, oh my God, it's awful. Like he doesn't sleep and I'm so tired and my boobs are so sore and blah, blah, blah. And then how are you getting on? And then it switching back to them and then being like, yeah, they would love it. Like wouldn't change it for the world. Little whatever is already sleeping through. And, you know, and I would be like, well, what the hell? I've been missold here. This is not like, you know, and I'll say to Henry now, who is the most chilled out 12-year-old ever, I'm like wanted to send you back. Like I wanted a refund or a swap. Yeah. Because I would look at the other babies that were sleeping and eating and, you know, going for chilled walks and then look at mine. He was just so angry all the time. And obviously with the benefit of hindsight, it wasn't his fault. And, you know, he was just really unhappy with being a baby. And, you know, he's more than made up for it now, but he knows. I often say to him, like, it was like you just hated being a baby and then you became a toddler and you were feisty, but it was quite fun. But that baby stage was just hell. And I felt as though it was my problem that I wasn't coping and that he was unhappy because it was obviously something that I was doing wrong or not doing right anyway. So yeah, the blog was the way of whispering to start with because I didn't have any followers. Like, this is hard, isn't it? Like, you know, we're not allowed to say, but there's a little bit of me that misses my old life. Like God, I love this creature. I would jump in front of a bus for him in a heartbeat to save him. But sometimes I just want to open the front door and keep walking and not. So it was that me going, there's either a conspiracy going on here where other people are finding it difficult, but not admitting it, or I'm just massively not cut out for it. It's one of the two. We'll soon find out. So I kind of started tapping away on my keyboard, writing these blog posts. And then the response as they were shared, you know, on Facebook initially was just incredible, with just people being like, oh my God, this is exactly how I feel. It was like a whole army. And obviously by that point, I realized actually I wasn't unmumsy at all. That was just normal. But it was so far against what we'd been fed online and in print of this glossy version of parenthood that I just felt like we could never match up to. And we still don't, but I don't care anymore. I don't try to. I'm like, we're just a normal family. And those moments of imperfections and just real life have, I think, been normalized online, you know, in so much as the landscape's changed in 12 years and people share the good, the bad and the ugly now. So it's fine. At the time, there wasn't a lot of that. There was just a lot of feeling as though people would say, well, if you were just going to moan about having a baby, why did you have one? And that was that fear I held so tightly inside me all the time. Can't moan, because this is what we wanted. When actually I was completely falling apart a lot of the time. So, yeah.
As we mentioned, it was 6 months in. 12 months ago, yeah, when we first chatted on the podcast. Fast forward now to 18 months. In terms of parenting, you didn't feel mumsy 12 years ago. You said earlier that you now feel the mumsiest you've ever felt. Just share a bit more about that and about the positive impacts that not drinking has had on you as a woman, as a mum, as a wife, you know, and on your family.
Yeah, it's the biggest gain, I think, for me. And this was something that came up in a lot of the podcasts I listened to early on. As you guys know, from day one, I began binge listening to your episodes. I went back, not all the way back, but I did go back quite far. And, you know, I would listen time and again to people saying, I've gained so much time. Like I feel like there are more hours in the day because I'm not wasting them either just drinking. And then, you know, you don't really properly remember those hours, or you write off a few hours the next day. So yeah, I've gained time and patience and that sense of just being happy with where I am. Being present, I think, is quite tricky as a parent. And I was having this conversation with somebody in the playground the other day when I said, I get it that we're all supposed to be mindful and we're supposed to be present and we're supposed to be in the moment. And I think I'd seen something online that morning that was like, be where your feet are, you know, like with your brain, like be trying to be. And that's what I'm striving for. But so much of parenting, especially when you have school age kids, is spent getting stuff ready for the next day. So I feel as though shouting into the void sometimes and saying, you know, I can't be present because my brain is quite literally always in tomorrow's PE lesson or piano lesson, or so that I find that tricky. But even when I'm doing those everyday mundane tasks, like sorting out the kids' clothes for the next day, or like paying for a school trip online, or all the admin that comes with parenting, and there is a lot, right? It's a full-time job. I feel so much more grateful to be doing those things. So just that awareness of I'm really busy and God, this is boring, and how has he possibly got through three, you know, PE t-shirts in as many days when, you know, I'm like constantly washing and I don't know that. But also this is, I know for a fact that I will look back at this era of parenting as a really good one. I know, like already I feel it. You know, like when you feel like you're living in real time, the moments that there'll be nostalgia for in the future. And I just know that. I look at the boys, they are such good fun. And I look at the dynamic that the five of us have as a family. And I just think, I love it. I love being with them. I love the time spent at home. We're real like home bodies. We're mostly always all at home. And that for me is different, I think, to how I felt definitely 12 years ago. But even in the drinking era 2-3 years ago, I felt like drinking was always a little bit of a way to escape from my own life. And it's not actually a life I want to escape from. I like it here. I do really like it here. You know, it's not without its challenges, but yes, it's a challenge to be more present. That's not an easy thing when you're busy. But even in those moments of absolute madness, I think I have an awareness of life is really good. Like this is, if you could take me out of this situation in the future and play it back on a tape and say, you know, look at 2024, I think I'd be like, that was great. The kids were great ages. Work was exciting. You know, I write books for a living, which is my absolute dream job. Again, that's not without its stresses. That's a whole nother roller coaster and journey on its own. But I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. And you're right, that striving for the everyday ordinary moments and not trying to have these super high highs all the time, just being happy with the kind of glorious ordinary.
I love that. And it's okay not to drink, and it's okay to enjoy the ordinary, because like you say, you know, aside from all the chaos that comes with family life, parenting or whatever it is, it's absolutely glorious, isn't it, when it's not overshadowed by a hangover, or in my case, you know, looking at the clock thinking, when's it okay to have a drink?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, you know, like Ben and I were saying about feeling different in our 30s to how we felt about drinking in our 20s. And I really don't like, I know we joke about the cringe and the time hops and all the rest of it, but bigger picture again, I don't really look back and regret the times that I spent getting absolutely, you know, wasted, and all those mistakes and all the kind of written off hangover days, because I feel as though there's no point in wasting energy being like, oh, I wish I hadn't done that, or I wish I'd, you know, because I, you know, there were points, I think, in my teens and 20s when I did enjoy it genuinely. I enjoyed the madness of it, the kind of, and the, you know, it's massively glamorized, and I joined in with that at that time, but it was creeping in to start to be like, this isn't fun anymore, but I'm still doing it. Why am I still doing it? And I think that's when you know you're still trying to cling on to the person that you were before, but actually you're not that person anymore anyway. So what is the point in, like, yeah, keeping drinking for the sake of it? So yeah, it's the, like, nights out. I think when I spoke to you last time, I'd been on a couple, and I really, again, haven't, you know, I've done like had some really nice meals out, and done like, you know, the cinema and theater and really like nice fun stuff with friends, but I haven't really done more than a couple of what I would call nights out. And that's because I've just realized that they were only fun because I'd been drinking. So now I'm like, I just can't be bothered. Like, it takes a lot of energy to stand at a bar all night when you haven't been drinking. But it only used to be fun because drinking would take the edge off that, being aware that your body was actually knackered and wanting to go home and have a cup of tea and some cereal. That's all I ever want on a night out, is to go home and have a bowl of Weetos and a cup of tea. And now I just do that. If I do go out, I just go, I'm calling it a day, guys. And that's the point at which I think I've probably always been ready to go home, but wine told me that no one was going home yet. There's still, you know, poles to dance around and shots to be taken. But it was all, I don't know, I just feel like sometimes now I feel, not in the early days when maybe it was more fun, but I think in the last 5-10 years, any times out that I've been drinking, I just feel like it was a massive con. I was just conning myself that it was fun. And actually I just ended up down on energy, down on money, mental health, like, suffering, all so that I could cling on to, oh, she's still a good laugh on a night out. And I think once you make peace with the fact that you don't actually ultimately care if somebody thinks you're not a laugh on a night out anymore, they're probably not your people anyway, are they, if that's all you've got to bond over. So yeah,
so much of it, I think, I mean, speaking from my experience, from so much of it was people pleasing, really. So much of it was that desperation to be liked. So much of it was, I'm good at this. So much of it was, look how much fun I'm having, you know? And it's, I wouldn't change it, you're right. But I wish I could kind of go back and just be like, mate, it's all right. You don't have to play it for anyone. Just be you. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
You're cool. You're fine. You know? I want to ask you, because producer Shaz has just dropped a message in the chat box saying, remember, we've got to wrap it up soon. Noted, Sharon. I do listen. But I really want to ask before we go, we kind of touched on it earlier about how it's fabulous when anybody says, right, I'm alcohol free and I'm really enjoying it. And if you have that kind of confidence to do it, you of course don't have to, but if you just never know who's watching, do you? I think it's even braver when, you know, the number of people you've got on your Instagram, for example, is hundreds of thousands of people, like it is in your case. What kind of reactions, you said you got a lot of reaction from the podcast last time, what kind of reactions did you get?
And yeah,
was there a theme to the reactions, or was it all completely different?
It was incredible. It blew me away, actually. You know, people reply to everything. Like, you could put a story up of, you know, of literally nothing, here's a shoe, and you'll get 10 people replying with, you know, their comments on the shoe, or, you know, that's like, it's like Instagram is mad. So I knew that I would open the floodgates to people who would have an opinion on me not drinking. And I think I braced myself for like a mass exodus of followers that would be like, well, she's, you know, this page is shit now because she's really boring and she's become one. She's become a virtue signaling, preaching, you know, sober life, drum banging, you know, bore. So that was my panic. And actually that just, it was completely the opposite. So I had people either saying, like, this is really inspiring. And I have had quite a few messages from people since then to say, I listened to that episode and I was already kind of sober curious, as they say. And that was the catalyst that made me go, right, well, if she can do it, you know, then I can do it and I want to do it. I had people messaging saying, this is real food for thought because I don't enjoy drinking anymore, but I'm still doing it. Why am I still doing it? So that, you know, lots of people along those themes. And then just, I would say, kind of like a blanket fascination from people, drinkers and non-drinkers, just wanting to know more information. Why? What? Why not? Why, you know, well-meaning questions, but at times you have to make sure you're in the right headspace to, you know, because if I'm there making the kids tea and I open Instagram and the question is, well, why can't you moderate? What's wrong with you? It's kind of like, oh, but yeah, people just fascinated by it. And I think surprised that I, you know, it wasn't what they expected me to do. And I think I still get messages now from people that will be quietly be like, are you still not drinking? And I'm like, yeah, it's still great. And then they're like, okay. They just want to kind of check in. And so, yeah, it was amazing. And so many people resonated with our last episode that, you know, it resonated with them. And they reached out to say either, oh God, I really recognize myself in the you that you were talking about that was becoming a bit of a car crash on a night out. And that's me, help. But also people who are just not there yet. They're not ready to take that step to change their life. And that's not me saying that in a judgmental way, because I wasn't ready for a long time either. It wouldn't have occurred to me. I've looked at people that had gone alcohol free and thought, you know, that's amazing. God, I wish I could be like them. But, you know, obviously I'm not going to go on a night out and not drink. That would be mad. So the obs. So, you know, it's really difficult to have those conversations with people because often they will message and go like, oh, I'm going to give up drinking. I've just got to get through my cousin's hen do and so-and-so's wedding. And you know, and first I would reply and say, there's never going to be a good time. Like if you're waiting to do that last thing and that last thing and that last thing, then you're acting as though giving up is punishing yourself. It's like when actually you're doing something really great for you. But equally, I know that if somebody's like, I am going to cut down, but I'm going to wait until I've done the girls' holiday to Ibiza. I think they're not quite in the zone yet. But the very fact that they are thinking about it, that little tiny red flag has gone off in their brain where they've gone, have I got a healthy relationship with alcohol, or is there something going on here, could life be better without it, is amazing. Like, it's amazing to even contemplate if your relationship with alcohol could be improved or if you'd be better off getting rid of it altogether. I think that's a really positive thing. So sometimes people will be like, oh, I gave up for 2 months, but then, you know, I did this, and then I felt peer pressure on a night out. And I'm always like, you don't think, oh, that's a, you know, that's a failure. You're clearly on the alcohol free journey already. You know, you're just going to have a few setbacks, but I'm sure, you know, listening to other guests on the podcast, it is actually quite rare, I think, that day one isn't often the final day one. There are lots of, you know, for lots of people there are lots of day ones. I think for me, probably having a public profile on social media held me more accountable, so that I wasn't, you know, it made me less likely, I think, to go back, because I was like, well, I've said it now, which is why strategically I waited until I got to about day 65, I think, before I went, I haven't had a drink for this many days, because I think at that point I was like, I know where this is. only heading one way.
And
now.
We sent you a 100-day postcard. Do you remember?
You did. Yeah. You did. I do remember. I know.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Sarah, it's been fantastic. I wish we could speak for another hour, but sadly we can't. We are well and truly out of time. It's so good to catch up, to find out what the past 12 months have been like. So thank you. Before you go, please do give your socials a plug, Sarah, and also whichever book you've got coming out next, because I can't keep up.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Again, if we could make it a yearly tradition, that would be great. I don't know at what point it would be like she's done however many however many months. Yes. So you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. I'm still at the Unmumsy Mum, and my new novel is called On the Edge, and it comes out on the 4th of July this year.
Sarah Turner, amazing. Thank you kindly.
Thank you.